Today we've got our first introduction to the frameworks of reaction. We have thermodynamics, kinetics, and equilibrium that we're going to review this week. Since we had the quiz today, it's going to be impossible for me to get through everything I wanted to with thermodynamics, so we'll start today, likely finish it up on Thursday, start kinetics, maybe finish a little bit of kinetics on Friday, and then get through equilibrium. So today I just want to get through some essential terminology, fundamental terminology, and set us up to talk about this word stable, because many times during the course we're going to talk about something being more stable or less stable. But there's only one case in which it's technically correct to use that word, and so that's what this is leading up to. So first, if we're talking about thermodynamics, we need to start with what a system is. So what is a system in thermodynamic terms? Oh dear. Well, for chemical applications, what do you think a system is? Oh dear. Yes. So there's this idea that there's a local environment and something else that we call the surroundings. So in fact, the system is anything that you want it to be. It's just an arbitrary frame of reference. Normally for chemical reactions, it would be the chemicals involved in that reaction and maybe the solvent that they're dissolved in. But it would exclude the glassware or anything else. That we would call the surroundings. So the system is an arbitrary frame of reference. Arbitrary means you define it how you want to define it. And if we're talking about chemical reactions, it's usually the reaction mixture. So it's not that technical a drawing, just to get an idea. We have the system, and then we have this thing called the surroundings. And what we're worried about in thermodynamics is keeping track of energy as it enters or leaves the system. And so that energy, in fact, we have the term internal energy, which is usually designated by capital letter U. Does anyone remember from 1B what that form of internal energy is? Like if you heat something up, what's happening to it? It's kind of the same idea as thermal energy, where you've got all these molecules that are wiggling around. And so it's a form, really, you could say, of kinetic energy. But it's not something you can actually directly measure, because you're talking about the sum of all the different kinds of motions in all the different bonds and all the molecules within a system. So it is, in fact, the total of all vibrational, rotational, and translational motion of all matter within the system. An important point that we'll come back to is the fact that internal energy cannot be directly measured. But changes in internal energy can be measured. So if I had some metal block, for example, I can't put a probe in it and say, here's its total internal energy. But I could measure the energy that's being put in that block to change its temperature. Now, if we're going to be talking about changing internal energy, we have to at least briefly reference the first law of thermodynamics. Which, does anybody remember one of the ways to express what the first law is? Well, simply put, it's you can't create something from nothing. That more technically within a closed system. A closed system is one in which neither matter nor energy can cross the barriers of that system. So within a closed system, energy nor matter can be created or destroyed. More, in a more modern sense, you'd say the combination of energy and matter has to remain constant, since energy and matter are technically interconvertible. So within a closed system, which is a system that does not allow energy or matter to flow across the system boundaries, in that kind of system, change in internal energy is going to be zero. Again, you can't create something from nothing, can't destroy it. But there's no restriction on what happens within that system. So energy can change forms. And this is the idea behind what you did when you did a calorimetry experiment. So in Chem 1A, you had the styrofoam cup that you treated as if it was some sophisticated, isolated system. That whatever chemical reaction you did inside that cup, that energy was being absorbed just by the water. So you used the first law as the foundation of that experiment. More generally, we could say that internal energy could be changed by one of two things: heat, so in the form of temperature, or work, which generally refers to what's known as pressure volume work. Now, since this is not the Chem 1 sequence, and particularly since it's not physics, we're not going to mention the pressure volume work almost at all in this course. Because to really get into it, we really need calculus. But I do need to mention that that is one of the things that can change internal energy. So change in internal energy is due to heat, normally represented as Q, and or work, the form of W. Again, we're not really going to deal with pressure volume work much, but let me just out loud explain what that pressure volume work is. Imagine you have some kind of chemical reaction that produces a gas. Well, if that gas was going to expand, then it's going to fight against whatever atmospheric pressure is around it. To push back against that surrounding atmosphere requires energy, requires work. So expansion or contraction of gases is what constitutes the large proportion of work in chemical systems. Now, if we don't want to have to worry about that work, then there's a combination function that we can come up with. If we take the change in internal energy and we factor back in the work or factor back out, then this is something that we define as enthalpy. So enthalpy is a measure of internal energy adjusted for pressure volume work. In many cases, enthalpy is exactly the same thing as internal energy. So if you have a chemical reaction that's done at constant pressure, and all you have is liquids, and the volume of the solution doesn't change at all, then enthalpy is internal energy. So that's why many times, instead of saying the enthalpy of reaction, we'll in a lazy way say heat of reaction, because it's pretty much equivalent, but technically not. But because we're making this adjustment for PV work, we don't have to worry about it. We can say that this is the raw energy of the reactants or products. And anytime that we're dealing with chemical reactions, we're talking about changes in energy, we're going to discuss it in terms of enthalpy. The main advantage is that we don't have to, on a case-by-case basis, worry about work. It's already built into that value. And all the tables that you have in your textbooks already have that included. So to sum up what we've gone through so far and highlight the important points, we have the idea of a system, that there's some arbitrary set of boundaries that we establish, and we worry about energy coming into or out of that system. Most of the time, it's going to be the chemicals in a chemical reaction. When we're discussing that energy change, we're usually going to do so in the terms of enthalpy, which is nearly the same thing as internal energy. It's just got this fudge factor built in so that we don't have to worry about any kind of work that might be involved. Questions up to this point? Well, since I've mentioned enthalpy, I should discuss this little facet called the sign convention. There's two very common things that happen with chemicals are that they're going to have bonds broken or bonds formed. So from the perspective of a molecule, if you break a bond, is that going to require an input of energy or is that going to release energy? From the perspective of molecule, if you break a bond, it's going to absorb energy because breaking a bond is not a favorable process. The only reason a bond forms in the first place is because it's going to release energy. So turn that back around. If you break a bond, then you're going to have to input energy into it. So the sign convention in thermodynamics is like this, that in that kind of case where energy is being absorbed by a system, we say that that's a positive energy change because energy is being put in the system. What is the term for this kind of process where energy is absorbed? Endothermic, that's right. So that is when energy is added to the system. The opposite would be if energy is released from the system. So for an example, if you form a bond, when you form a bond, that releases energy that has to go somewhere, goes outside the molecule, outside of what we normally call the system. So that would be a case of something being called exothermic. The energy is released from the system. Now Thursday, when we continue talking about thermodynamics, we'll see two other quantities, entropy and free energy, both of which also follow the same sign convention. If energy is going out, it's negative, and energy is coming in, it's positive. Now, we don't really have time for me to properly introduce those other quantities. So I want to tackle one other very important idea, which I got just enough time to describe. Which is this statement. That enthalpy is a state function.
And before we try to talk about a state function, let's define what is a state.
And not what someone from Section 1 said, which is California. What is a state? See, these are all terms, system, state, and such things that we have kind of this working idea of, but trying to put an exact definition to, we're getting stumped. Yeah? That could be one way of describing it. The suggested answer was the way in which energy is configured. More generally, we say it's all the different physical descriptions of a system. For example, temperature, pressure, volume, location, some measurable aspect of that system. All those things put together are its state.
So state is the set of all physical descriptions of a system. Again, examples would be things such as pressure, volume, temperature, location.
Energy configuration could be another, but that's if we're delving much deeper into the type of system that we're talking about. So if this is what a state is, its description, then if we have a function that's called a state function, what does that mean? What's that? Right, if you have some equation that you say that's a state function, what does that mean about that equation? No, it's because there's something even more important. It depends only on those things, meaning that you look at where the system starts, its initial state, and you look at the end of that state, that end of that system, and it doesn't matter at all what happens between, the change is completely independent of that. We just worry about where we start, where we end up.
So state function is a function the value of which only depends on the initial and final states. Not at all on how the process occurs. Its complement, its opposite, would be a path function, which is a function the value of which entirely depends on how a process occurs. And not necessarily on its initial and final states. We got barely enough time for me to give you a quick example of this, which the example I always give is of displacement versus distance. So displacement is the following. Let's say that in order to be awake enough for your quiz, you needed to get some caffeine. One of the nearby places, for example, would be Coffee Society. And so I could ask you, what is the shortest distance between here and Coffee Society? Well, the shortest distance is a proverbial straight line. And that's displacement, the overall difference between two points. If I'm asking what the displacement is, if I'm asking what the shortest distance is, it doesn't mean how do you get there, what pathway can you take. It means physically how far apart are they from each other. So what's the only way that you can change the distance between here and Coffee Society? Move here or the Coffee Society. In other words, you have to move one of the points. You have to move either the initial or the final state. So it doesn't matter how you get from one to the other, because that's not what the question is asking. The opposite would be total distance traveled. Because you can't walk straight from here to there. There are going to be some turns in your path, and depending on your unique path that you take, the distance is going to change. So that's not a state function, that's a path function, because it entirely depends on how you go. In theory, the shortest that could be is that distance between two points if there's nothing obstructing you. Otherwise, it could be infinity. You could go around and around as many times as you want before you end up there. Why does this relate back to enthalpy? What's so important about enthalpy? Well, enthalpy being a state function means it doesn't matter how you synthesize the reactants, doesn't matter how you synthesize the products, they'll always have that same enthalpy. And so if you have reactants converting into products, that energy change during the reaction is independent of how the reaction occurs. That's Hess's law. Another way of saying Hess's law is if you have multiple reactions that add up to a bigger reaction, just add the energies. But that's the same thing. The start point and the end point, if they're the same, it doesn't matter how you get between them. That energy change is the same. That's the idea that we'll pick up with and continue with on Thursday.